Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for December 3rd, 2023. I am a voice you haven't heard in a while, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, making my return after a two-week absence here to Wrestling Night in America. So thanks, everyone, for joining us this weekend. For those who don't know, I missed the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, I was in Jamaica getting married. So I feel like that's a pretty good excuse to not be on the show. And then last weekend, that was actually our ceremony. And then last Saturday, which I didn't even realize until probably that week, was Survivor Series. I was planning on doing the show on Sunday, and then I realized, oh, Saturday's Survivor Series. You got to have a post-show for that. So Saturday night, I was actually doing the official ceremony of our wedding, so getting it signed, sealed, and delivered officially. So I thank Brandon LeClaire and Kelly Wells for filling in for me last weekend while I was taking care of some marriage business there. But now I'm back, and of course, this week I've acquired a cold, and for much of this week was without my voice. So luckily that happened earlier in the week, so I am able to hopefully conduct business as usual here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. As usual, feel free to call in 515-605-9345 if you're listening live, and you can also email us at wnialivecast@gmail.com. Love getting phone calls, love getting emails, and really love talking to our pwtorch.com family members who are my co-hosts and who make up a great deal of this show. And this week I'm happy to have on a longtime contributor of my audio shows, not just Wrestling Night in America, but dating back to Moonlighting with Greg Parks, Joel Donnell, PWTorch.com contributor. Joel, wonderful to have you along here with us on this first show of December.
Yeah, absolutely to hear from. Absolutely great to hear from you, Greg. And congratulations on the marriage this past week. I hope that you're well rested, even though you got a little bit of a cold here. But that's exciting to be able to do that in Jamaica. That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun. It was an all-inclusive resort. We had family members from both sides of our family were able to make it. Probably not as many as if we had it here in the United States, but I think that made it a little more special. It was nice to, you know, part of the reason we had it in Jamaica was it's a little cheaper than having it here, especially in Florida. And being able to have so much of it taken care of for you, we don't have to stress the small stuff. And so, again, it was just a beautiful, beautiful evening, a beautiful week vacation that we were able to have there as well. So thank you for that, Joel. But we're back to business here on Wrestling Night in America. So I thought it was important to have you on the show. You know, I missed a lot of big shows, AEW pay-per-view, obviously Survivor Series last weekend, and all the big TV that happened in between. And here on Wrestling Night in America, we do like to focus on the big shows in pro wrestling. You know, Joel, I have you on because you were at Survivor Series in Chicago on Saturday night, and you were also at Dynamite this Wednesday. So I thought it was important to have someone who had eyes and ears on the ground, so to speak, here talking about those shows with me. And I just want you to, and I know it's a, maybe a little bit of an unfair comparison because WWE had one of their core four pay-per-views, or historically what has been one of their core four pay-per-views in Survivor Series, and AEW just had an episode of Dynamite. So it may be unfair to compare the two, but how would you compare the two events that you went to? And you know, I'm going to leave this open-ended for you to compare and contrast it in any way you see fit, whether it's, you know, the crowd reactions, the type of people who were in the crowd, the event itself, how the show flowed, how the show was run from a company standpoint, but just compare those two events that you went to this week.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was at this past week's or last Saturday's Survivor Series at the Allstate Arena in Chicago. And as Greg mentioned, I was also at the taping of Dynamite and Rampage at the Target Center in Minneapolis. So I did the 6.5-hour drive from here in Minnetonka down to Rosemont in Illinois. Greg, they were two very different events. And I actually went with my fiance and a couple friends to both these events so that they could kind of get the gauge too, and I got their feedback as well so they could compare and contrast, because I've been to so many over the years, but I wanted to really get their feedback as well. And as you mentioned, it's a little bit difficult to compare the two of them equally, because Survivor Series was really built as such a big show. But I mean, the immediate thing that I would say the difference between the two was building up to the events is that for the WWE show, you know, a lot of it is just kind of waiting there, waiting for the show to start. We've heard a lot of these things before, but it was so apparent this past week being able to go to both shows that in the WWE show, they're filming something or they're taping something for television. And you're really a prop that's a part of the show, less so of actually going to an event where they're engaging you. And when I went to Dynamite, it was really they made an emphasis about the crowd engagement and making the people in the audience feel like they're a part of it. Justin Roberts is talking to the crowd. They're doing a lot of appreciation for Bob, who was on their ring crew and started to get chants going. AEW does a really nice job of making it less of just you're there for something that's being taped for television that's meant for somebody else, and more, hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for coming out to the show. And, so it just gives you a different feeling overall. But the WWE show obviously was bigger, being a pay-per-view or a PLE, there was a number of huge events that happened on this show. So the crowd reactions were huge in Chicago. This was my first time actually at the Allstate Arena. I've been to lots of other AEW shows at the United Center, the Now Arena, the Wintrust Arena. I've been to different indie shows in different suburbs of Chicago, but this was actually my first WWE show in the Chicagoland area and my first time at the Allstate Arena. And so it was nice to take in, you know, that unique perspective of what it's like in that building and knowing the history of having a couple of WrestleManias there, obviously having the history of the John Cena and CM Punk Money in the Bank there, a number of historic things happening in that building. But one of the things that really struck me was this was one of the loudest Chicago crowds that I've been a part of. I was messaging Wade Keller as the CM Punk moment was happening, and, you know, the CM Punk moment there was just such a loud reaction. And I wasn't there for when he made his debut back at the United Center at that Rampage in 2021 or a Collision earlier this year. But this was, I mean, a really unique, just a really engaged crowd. I was telling Wade as well that this was a really compliant crowd, that this crowd really, what WWE feeds them is what they're going to accept. And they want to embrace it and make it the best show possible. There was a lot of people trying to get CM Punk chants started throughout the show, before the show, in the hallways. And those were really quickly booed down. And my perception of that was less of people booing them because they didn't want CM Punk at the show, but more people booing them because they didn't want those CM Punks to ruin their enjoyment of the show. Eventually when Punk did come out at the end of the show as the big surprise, I mean, everybody was full on. They were totally accepting it. They realized they were part of a big moment. It was something that was really cool, because going to a lot of WWE shows, you just don't get as big of that surprise, where AEW has really built their brand on those big surprises, the big debuts, the big signings. And so it was really cool to see WWE kind of swing that momentum in their direction, where they really have, they bring a lot of that bravado. They bring a lot, they have a lot going for them right now. Where the crowd is just eating up what they want, or what they're giving them, and it's less of people who are unhappy with the direction that WWE is going in. You know, there used to be detractors in the crowd, people who were chanting CM Punk when they were upset. with what the company was giving them. And the audience is just really fully engaged with the characters that they're presenting, the direction they're going, with the finishes of the matches. People are really into what's happening with WWE right now. And then versus AEW, AEW was much less of a crowd, obviously, because it's not a pay-per-view. It was about 5,000 people in the Target Center. And AEW's ran the full year pay-per-view. They also had Dynamite and Rampage here before, which was the Quake by the Lake special. And so this was more just kind of a regular routine Dynamite where we got to see some of the Continental Classic, but, you know, no special branding for this type of show. So I figured that it wouldn't be as strong of an attended show. But, people were, again, they were fully engaged with this. You know, they were enjoying what they were seeing, no detracting of it. I think people right now are, you know, for the most part, the people who are paying to attend these shows are enjoying what they're getting out of it. You know, there's different things that people wish, maybe they push somebody more or that they might go in a different direction with some of the finishes. But overall, I mean, people who are paying money, taking the time to go out to these shows or travel to them are really enjoying the direction of where both companies are headed.
So I think even if you're a fan of AEW, and maybe you wouldn't agree with this, but there seems to be a consensus that WWE is the hotter product right now. I think that's borne out in ratings year over year. I think that's borne out in, the attendance at the live events that happen. Could you sense that from either the crowds themselves or just being around the people before and after the event, you know, milling around the concourse or entering, exiting the arena? Did you really get a sense that WWE was the hotter product, or was it just the AEW fan base was just as happy and just as hot for the product and just as amped for it as the fans who were attending the WWE Survivor Series show?
I mean, for WWE, it just seemed, you know, obviously having the debut of CM Punk having the return of Punk is going to be get people really, really excited about the product. But with WWE, it really felt like, you know, people cannot wait to see what the next steps were. What's the follow up? When are they coming back to town? When can I spend more money on this product? Versus AEW, you know, people were mostly satisfied with what they were seeing, but they, you know, people want to have all those beats hit on the AEW show of kind of getting some of those good matches, maybe getting a few promos here and there, but it just didn't feel like people were as amped up to, you know, continue to spend more money to see this product again. It was just, hey, they're coming to town. Let's go see this. We'll enjoy it for what it is. But I didn't see that sense of excitement where people are ready to get invested all over the product. And maybe if it was another AEW pay-per-view, but certainly when I've been to other AEW pay-per-views, people enjoy it for what it is. They're excited to see the matches. They're excited to see, some big outcomes and see where the direction is headed. But it just don't get that same sense where people are ready to keep spending more money and spending more time on the product. One of the things I really paid attention to when I was at the Survivor Series show is always, like, what's the merch line look like? How much merchandise are they, are they selling? Because that always seems to be a key indicator for me as to how much people are really wanting to invest in this versus just going and seeing the show for what it is. And pretty significantly long lines. WWE seems to be pretty efficient with the way that they process through those lines. Plenty of merchandise exclusively for the Survivor Series show. A lot of also wrestler specific stuff that was there. Whereas at the AEW show, again, another television show, not the pay-per-view, but it just wasn't as strong, you know, for merchandise. People just didn't seem as excited to get in line and to keep buying more of the stuff there. And WWE just seems to be able to charge enormous amounts for this stuff. For a lot of these types of collector type items, and people are wanting to buy this to quote unquote, buy a piece of history of this event. Mm-hmm. One of the things I noticed too was that Cody Rhodes, there was this Cody Rhodes weight belt that was camouflaged, it said War Games on it, signed by him, and they were charging $500 for this. And people were buying these belts. I mean, $500, Greg, for this signed belt, and people were wanting to buy it. They were excited to get it. You know, and just at AEW, I don't think there's anything quite like that. They have the replica belt, yeah. But certainly, you know, I'm not that type of fan who's going to spend that much money. But I'm telling you, for WWE, they are finding these people who are out there who are going to buy these types of things. So there's just a huge excitement about the WWE brand. I know that there's a lot of talk about what's going to happen at WrestleMania, who's going to win Royal Rumble. There's a lot of things for people to look forward to and speculate on, whereas I just didn't get that same sense at the AEW show. That's kind of, they're taking it as it is, taking it week by week. There's less of the speculation, the conversation about things to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. And I thought you brought up some very good points there. I think the AEW fan base is, as you said, take what comes and just enjoy the ride, whereas the WWE has built a system where fans are always looking forward to the next thing and speculating about it. And, you know, that's something, too, that takes a lot of time to build up. That doesn't just happen overnight. And so, you know, maybe when AEW has their signature events established in the same way that WWE has established the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania as signature events, that'll eventually take place. What about the crowds in terms of the makeup of it? You know, it's long been said, and anyone who's been to WWE house shows know, that's a family affair. You know, you see a lot of families at house shows, especially when you compare them to TV attendance. Did you get a sense that there was a difference in terms of age, demographic, or anything like that from the AEW Dynamite taping versus the Survivor Series?
Yeah, I think people who've gone to both can say the same thing, that it's similar but different. There is this difference between both the WWE and AEW crowd, where obviously you go to the WWE show and there is going to be a lot more families, a lot more kids. And so, of course, when you're bringing the kids, then there comes the merchandise, there comes all those other things to purchase for them, whereas AEW is a lot more of, there's a lot more couples. Sometimes they're going with their friends, and they may not be as willing to go and buy that, you know, cardboard cutout of Jay White or buy these other things that are available at the AEW show. But certainly, you know, it's hard to exactly describe what is the difference between the two, because certainly, you know, it's hitting a lot of the same age demographic. But there is more kids at WWE shows, but certainly there are some younger people at the AEW shows. But it just seems like the WWE right now is just such a much more hardcore fan base, that the people who are going to this are really into it. They're wearing the shirts, they're wearing all the merchandise. Whereas AEW just, it has had that previously, but it wasn't as strong this time around. You just didn't see as many people proudly wearing their shirts or proudly buying that merchandise for the show. And again, it could just be because it's the TV show versus seeing the pay-per-view, but certainly it just didn't seem like there's that type of loyalty towards the AEW brand that we're seeing right now for WWE.
And I think that comes with time, too. I think you saw it at the beginning of AEW because it was the new thing. People wanted to be on board from the beginning. They were really hungry for an alternative to WWE at the time. And, you know, as time wears on, that sort of wears off and people find other things to do. But WWE has been such an established brand for so long in people's lives. You know, this is something that, you know, for me personally, it's been a part of my life since I was probably 5 years old. And that nostalgia feeling and that feeling of having been a big part of your life for so long, that creates those types of more hardcore fans later on in life. And AEW just hasn't been around long enough to establish that, I don't think. Last question here before we get into our phone calls, 515-605-9345, if you want to call us up here on Wrestling Night in America to talk to me, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and my co-host for this week, PWTorch.com contributor Joel Donnell. You mentioned you brought your fiance and I think you said a friend of yours to these shows.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as to their reaction to both. Did they have a favorite show? Do they prefer one or over the other? How did they see the differences in the two?
Yeah, I mean, their first comments, of course, was before the show and trying to get people amplified before that, whereas AEW has a lot of engagement from Justin Roberts. There's a lot of commercials, promos, music, that as you're entering the actual arena part and getting to your seat, that you're feeling a lot more excitement to get excited for the show to start, whereas WWE was very much just, you know, you go to your seat, a lot of quiet, people maybe starting a couple chants here and there, but for the most part, they're just kind of, you know, waiting until that, that PLE, you know, privacy graphic comes on the screen. And then that's when people get really into it. But they've been to, some AEW shows in the past and they prefer the AEW over WWE just because of the wrestling, the characters, where it just felt a lot more organic, where the characters felt like a lot like more themselves. Whereas they said in WWE, it just felt like people are more playing a type of character, that you know, playing to the hard camera. There's less of those types of organic moments. And specifically with the actual in-ring wrestling is that, you know, they said, man, the WWE stuff is very formulaic. You know, they go to this spot and then they go to this spot and then this happens. Whereas for AEW, they said it just felt like it was a lot more spontaneity, that felt like anything could happen in those types of matches, that you could see a lot more high flying. There was an element of danger at AEW where you feel like things could go in another direction. Not in the sense that a wrestler is going to be injured, but that it just adds to the drama of the match, whereas WWE seemed to be a little bit more predictable there. You know, and they've gotten to know some of the AEW characters because they follow them on social media, and then they're able to translate a lot of that into the ring, whereas WWE, it's very much here's your time, you come out there, you do your spot, and then you go away. And for AEW, you know, we could even see, and I mentioned this on my podcast with Greg Kanner, that you could even see from my vantage point where there was producers for AEW trying to wrap up certain segments, but, you know, the guys want to get their time in and make it that special moment. And I noticed that a lot with the Christian Cage and Adam Copeland segment, that, man, that was supposed to end, you know, 5 minutes or more earlier, but they wanted to keep going and Christian kept going and hitting all those right beats to make it a really great moment on that show. Whereas in WWE, it's kind of like, hey, if they run out of that time, they run out of that time, and it just doesn't get to hit, get to generate that same emotion had they given the correct amount of time and able to say the lines that they wanted to say. You know, it's a lot more scripted and they have to stick to their certain language with WWE. And so again, that spontaneity and more of the organic feeling for AEW.
That reminded me of the time that I went to Dynamite in Fort Myers. And it was William Regal's, it was the Wednesday after the pay-per-view that he had debuted on, and he was giving his first interview. And for the last 5 minutes or so of the interview, maybe longer, there was a floor director vigorously trying to get him to wrap up his promo. And he later online came out on Twitter and apologized for going along on that. And that was definitely something I'd never seen in all the WWE tapings that I'd been to. So I find that interesting, Joel. I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts and comparing these two live. I always kind of threaten my now wife that I want her to write a column of mine one day in the Torch newsletter. I have a column every week in the Torch newsletter. And it really does fascinate me to bring non-fans to these events or to have them watch pay-per-view or a show and just get their thoughts, like to pick their brain about what they're watching and what they're thinking as they're watching it. So I always tell her, I need you to write a column for me one of these days. I would just want you to write one, just giving your thoughts on what you've seen so far. But I don't know. She's a little reluctant to do that. So we'll see if I can convince her here down the line to write a column for me in the newsletter.
Give it some time.
I know. I'll wear her down sooner or later. But anyway, don't forget WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send some emails. We got a couple emails that we'll get to here during the show. And I want to go to our first phone call of the evening, though. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. Good to hear from you tonight. What's your first question for us?
My first question is about AEW. I recently went to the show last night for a Collision. And I bought it from the box office. I noticed my tickets were a lot cheaper than previous events. It was only like about $35. It was a really good seat, like better than the ones I've had before. I think I paid about $90 for upper deck seats before for AEW. So is there like a secret to finding like these good deals? Is this like entering the box office instead of Ticketmaster? Because that's what I did this time around.
Yeah, I think it really all depends on the demand. If there's not a lot of demand for a ticket, especially closer to showtime, the ticket prices are going to fall because they're going to want to get as many people in the arena as they can, sell as many tickets as they can, and if they have to mark down tickets at the last minute, they'll do that. So I guess if I had advice, if you wanted to find the best value or the cheapest ticket or the best price ticket, however you want to phrase it, I would say if there isn't a lot of demand for the show you want to go to, don't bother getting a ticket early. Wait, because you're going to be able to get tickets, you know, 2-for-1 tickets or ones that are significantly marked down. Joel, I know you go to a lot of shows, certainly more than I do. Is there any other secrets that you have for Ryan about how to get the best bang for his buck, I guess, at a TV taping or a show?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it depends on the kind of show that you're going to. If you plan on going to a pay-per-view type of show, I mean, you're going to likely need to get those tickets as soon as they go on sale or one of those pre-sales. I mean, being in Maryland, you're within striking distance of going to that AEW Revolution show in Greensboro, and that one I assume is going to be a pretty hot ticket where I don't think there's going to be too many deals going on for that show, especially not being in too large of an arena. But it seems lately the pattern has been for some of these AEW TV shows is that you're able to get these discounts that are happening within the week of the show. I mean, I'm a person who typically just wants to secure my seat, you know, as soon as I can and try to get the best seat possible for it. So I'll just buy them as they go on sale. But, you know, I still get the emails, like for this past Dynamite at Target Center, that there's the three for four deal. You start seeing some of those prices starting to go down. So it just really depends. But if it's a TV show, you're more than likely going to start to see some of those deals come into play within the last week or two before that event starts.
All right, Ryan, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Heavy question on Nick Aldis. Do you think he's headed for a feud with Randy Orton based on Randy Orton giving him a RKO? Could you like maybe picture him costing Randy the match with Roman Reigns when they wrestle, maybe at the Royal Rumble and leading to a match at WrestleMania?
I would doubt that, just given the fact that on social media, Nick Aldis just did kind of joke about the RKO that he took on Friday night, which is, I believe, the first bump that he's taken since taking over GM of SmackDown. He said something to the effect of, that really was out of nowhere. Like, there was no social media attempt by Aldis to build any kind of feud with Orton, and that would have been the opportunity to do so. So I really don't think so. I think WWE likes to have the two GMs running each show, and I think it's been effective so far. So not only do I think it won't happen, Joel, I think it would be a mistake for it to happen. As much as I think Aldis still has something to offer as an in-ring performer, I think right now he's doing a really nice job as GM of SmackDown.
Yeah, I would keep the status quo as it is with Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis both being former wrestlers. I really like the role that they're both playing. I liked how things kind of ended on SmackDown, that they both, you know, have they have a knack for being able to do things on the microphone and be effective in a non-wrestling type of role. I just think for Randy specifically that there's so many things that he has going on right now that a Nick Aldis feud is not a direction I would go into. You know, he's got the stuff that's going to be going on with Solo Sikoa. You know, he may have some stuff going on with Roman Reigns further down the road. There's a number of programs for him to go into. Even though it would be my preference for Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce to both stay into their role and not really get involved in wrestling, I certainly can't rule it out of it happening at some point. Just, you know, thinking that Nick Aldis at some point is probably going to get the itch to get back in the ring if it makes sense into some program. You know, if you're going to involve the GM getting into something, I'd probably keep it at something that's, you know, mid-card or lower on the card and not something where Randy has kind of come back as one of their top players. So if you wanted to do something with somebody much lower on the card, you know, I'd be fine with that as if it was like just a one-off. But I think right now, just keep it as is. I wouldn't get him involved in the ring right now.
And your third and final question for us tonight, Ryan.
Final question is on the devil. How do you feel about Britt Baker teasing that she's the devil and maybe Tony Khan even being the devil? Because I know some people have joked around about that.
I think Tony Khan would be a mistake. He simply doesn't have the acting chops to play it off, to pull it off. And
no,
I think he,
not at all.
I think he probably realizes that. So, Britt Baker, I think, is, if you were to make a list, Joel, of the top five candidates to be the devil, I think Britt Baker, because of her relationship with Adam Cole, probably makes that top five. That's a name that I've seen bandied about as a possibility by fans online. Mm-hmm. So it would not come as a complete shock. It's out there. It's something I think that's worth discussing when you're talking about candidates for that role. Do I think it's the best candidate? I guess I really haven't thought all that much about it yet. It doesn't seem like the reveal is coming anytime soon. So I'm not sure really how much stock to put or how much to really think about it right now. But what do you think about that, the potential of Britt Baker to be the devil? She's been off TV for quite some time, had some comments recently on social media about, I believe it was the amount of time that the women were getting. So what do you think about her coming back in that role?
Yeah, my co-host on the All Elite Conversation Club, Greg Kanner, has made his case, you know, for Britt Baker to be that there's a possibility of her being the devil. And certainly I think things line up right now for that to make a lot of sense with the connection with Adam Cole. She hasn't been on TV. She has complained about that on social media. Last time we saw her was, I believe, September, just right around after All Out time. So that would be, you know, around the time that we saw the devil kind of reappear. We're taking out Jay White and all that thing and all that stuff that happened there. So I don't rule that out as a possibility. I even think it's in the more likely of people. You know, it's starting to make a lot more traction online where people are speculating that just because the timelines line up for that pretty well. You know, I just don't think it's going to get that big, huge reaction from the crowd as more people start to speculate on that as more time goes on. But there's only a few number of people who are going to make sense in that role. Mm-hmm. And I think you could tell the story of people who are jaded from Max when he was more of a heel. There was a lot of speculation that Wardlow was one of the people under the masks this past Wednesday, that he was the one holding the baseball bat and then came back out for his match against AR Fox right after that. So you could tell the story of people like Wardlow who feel like they're wronged from him. I can't think of off the top of my head who some of those other people would be immediately. But you could certainly trace back and find these people and kind of put them in a group together led by Britt Baker or led by one of those individuals and tell a story that makes a lot of sense from that standpoint.
There was an episode of, I don't know if it was Dynamite or Collision, a few weeks ago, and it was MJF in the main event, and at the end when he was there in the ring celebrating, they had sort of a montage showing interested parties backstage watching, and it was like Samoa Joe and it was Wardlow. It was almost like a who's who of people who are gunning for MJF. And it's almost like if this were a serialized television show, you'd expect MJF to end up dead on the next episode. And they're showing you all the candidates of people who had a motive for wanting him dead. And I think in some ways they were also the candidates for the devil, because that's the person who's been out to get MJF. So it was just really funny the way that that was played out on television. Ryan, thank you so much for the phone call this week. Appreciate hearing from you.
Thanks for taking the call.
Of course. So the big news that we've had over the last couple weeks that I've been out and haven't had a chance to talk, I did talk a little bit about it on Greg Parks Out Loud, which is my audio show where I go through my full-page column in the Torch newsletter in audio form and expand on some of my thoughts on it. But CM Punk, the return to WWE of Punk at Survivor Series and the follow-up promo that he cut on Raw on Monday. Just being there live, Joel, and what was your I mean, it had to have been just as much of a shock to you as it was to people watching at home, mm-hmm. prepared for the show to end. The logo comes up on the screen, and then all of a sudden Punk's music hits. Tell us about that moment, and then what are your thoughts on Punk, generally speaking, back in the WWE environment?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were speculating, a lot of people hoping that he would show up at the Survivor Series show. But certainly, I don't think anybody actually thought that this was a real possibility, it was going to happen. You know, it almost became a joke online that's like, oh, CM Punk has been spotted in Chicago, confirmed for Survivor Series, you know, old pictures of him at Blackhawks games or different spots around Chicago, to where it became this almost self-deprecating joke of him coming back there. And so then when it actually hit, it was just, wow, you know, just a really surprising moment, because I know from being around a lot of people there that they wanted to see this return back, and WWE had a reputation.
Joel, was there any thought?
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but was there any thought that this was a tease of some kind, some heel trying to get heat and doing this, or was there not even time for that to run through people's minds?
Not really even time to run through people's minds. I mean, that people were, you know, they just were, as soon as the moment happened, I mean, it just was like, whoa, this is really a significant moment for WWE, that this music is playing, something you just have not heard in almost 10 years for the WWE show. So it certainly didn't come across my mind, didn't seem to come across other people's mind that this was, you know, some sort of heel tactic, which has been the case in the past. You know, I know definitely the WWE has done that for certain moments. I can think specifically in 2005 when Shawn Michaels was having his feud with Hulk Hogan, that he used the Bret Hart music to tease Bret Hart coming out there. And, you know, obviously those things do not go over well with the audience, but this is a new regime and they don't have the reputation for disappointing the audience or, you know, the bait and switch or getting them excited just to pull the rug out from under them. And I think that's been a really smart strategy from Paul Levesque and his team to give the crowd what they want, listen to what people are saying online, to what people in the audience are chanting for, and eventually giving that to them, even if it does take some time. But definitely, I mean, it was a huge, significant moment that people just could not believe was happening at the time. You know, it's just one of those things, like I said, that WWE has had a reputation for so long of just disappointing people, not giving them what they want at the end of a show, and to finally over-deliver on something where they got two great War Games matches, and then on top of that, getting the CM Punk debut was just totally propelled WWE into, you know, just another level of excitement from the fan base and further cinching them up as the number one group right now. You know, they just have a lot of momentum going for them. Like I said, there's a lot of things to speculate on, what's going to happen at Royal Rumble, what's going to happen at WrestleMania. And this definitely solidified it to where this should be a pretty exciting time if you're a loyal WWE fan.
There's a lot made about Punk's promo on Raw, and some people were disappointed. He certainly didn't go after AEW. He didn't use it as an airing of grievances. It wasn't a pipe bomb that we've become accustomed to hearing from Punk. It even felt to some people a little disingenuous, the I'm home line, knowing not only how his run in WWE ended, but just how much he had to fight against the WWE machine to get noticed in the first place. I never would call, if I was looking at Punk's career, I wouldn't call WWE his home. Certainly, I think ROH more than anything would qualify as that, but we know that's not in the cards right now because it's owned by Tony Khan. But overall, I mean, what were your expectations for this promo? And setting expectations aside, you know, without even, again, the whole AEW stuff, I think people were excited because this was going to be a newsworthy interview. It did not turn out to be that. But, you know, setting that aside, what did you think of his energy and just what he said as far as an interview that a lot of people were going to be looking at to see what was going to be his attitude upon his return to WWE, what was going to be his message, his what roadmap was he going to set for the coming days, weeks, and months of his WWE career. Just the overall package, what did you think of it?
Overall, I thought this just really kind of met expectations for me. It's Phil Brooks coming back into the WWE environment where he's not going to be able to just spout out and say whatever he wants. And I think that a lot of people knew that with him coming back into the fold, that it wasn't going to be, hey, here's a live mic, go out there and fill, 10 minutes of time and say whatever you want, where, that could be some of the case for some of the people in AEW. It's going to be a lot more structured. It's going to have a lot more scripted or at least bullet points for somebody like Punk at this point. To hit all the right beats for it. So there wasn't going to be any sort of burial of Tony Khan or AEW, especially if you're following that story. He's not going to be able to go down that path of really talking about them publicly. From my understanding is that they've signed all non-disclosure agreements so that they're not going to be able to go down that path. But it's, of course, I mean, Punk seems to be excited to be back in the WWE environment because I think he thrives off the crowd. He loves the crowd reactions. I think he loves professional wrestling, but it's the management, it's the authority stuff that has always seemed to really get to him. And just by having the mismanagement or lack of management in AEW seem to really be the issue, and then other people kind of picking at him and just kind of just agitating him, like we saw with Jack Perry and how things ultimately went down at the end of AEW, that now he's coming into a much more structured environment that's has new leadership from the last time that he was there, that Paul Levesque is the one in charge. Vince isn't even at the show. And it seems that, you can't really predict exactly how this is going to go down. Now, a lot of people have said, enjoy Punk while it lasts because he's probably not going to be here for very long, but he's into, new leadership, new management here. It's going to be something that's going to be a lot more structured. So he's going to be used to a lot of things in a lot of ways. But there's certainly going to be a hierarchy. People know who's going to be in charge when they're backstage. He's not going to be able to get away with a lot of the same antics that he had in AEW, but we'll continue to see how this goes along. He's not going to be there on a weekly basis. I think he'll be there, semi-weekly. He's announced for this coming Friday SmackDown. So he'll be back into the fold, but it's just not going to be the same type of environment where things could possibly go wrong for him. Of course, he could be just a perpetual discontent and things can go sideways no matter what, no matter how much you try to appease him or put a structure in place. But what I always thought was interesting in AEW is that in his promos, it always felt like he is being himself, and that always led to some natural heel tendencies. And so when he first started in AEW, it's like he's really thanking the crowd. He's really going over the top with this. And it was so over the top to a point where it's like, is this guy going heel? Is this kind of almost venturing into a point where he's just going so over the top with this? And, of course, we just never got to that point in the other promotion because of injuries and because of a whole list of other things that happened. But certainly this time around, with a comment that happened off the microphone after he did his bulk of I'm home and talking, lovingly to the crowd and how it's great to be back here. Now, that may be a mix of some genuine feelings, but I think he's just happy to be into a different place. I'm sure he's making great money with WWE. But they're playing a little bit into what's been known on the internet of his discontentment. Some of the stuff that Seth Rollins had said months ago about CM Punk coming in, accusing him of being a locker room cancer and that he didn't want him to be there. Now we've heard that Seth has, changed a little bit of course, as with a lot of other people, doing a little bit of public PR control for him. With saying things that, if it's going to do business, if Phil really wants to be here, then we're okay with him being on the brand. And certainly Punk's comment of he's not here to make money, if he's not here to make friends, he's here to make money. Certainly gives some credence to the fact that he may be turning heel at some point. And maybe that's the direction that he wants to go. as a character, you know, get some of that cheering out of the way, get some of that fans really embracing that he's back here, but then settle back into a role that he may be a lot more comfortable with, of playing that heel character and certainly setting things up with Seth Rollins.
Last question before we go to our next phone call. I believe it's Mike from Atlantic City in the 6009 area code. I look at, in my upcoming column I wrote this afternoon, I look at some of the potential opponents right off the bat for CM Punk. No real surprises there. You know, obviously they've teased Seth Rollins already with his reaction at Survivor Series to Punk's return, as well as mentioning Punk, calling him a hypocrite in a promo on Raw Monday night. Do you believe that's going to be the direction they go first with Punk? And if so, do you believe that's the right direction? And what are some other potential opponents for Punk within the first couple months, maybe his first feud or two, that you could see on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that that's the first direction they're going with, because of the reaction that Seth gave, and now they're referring, or Seth has been referring to that afterwards. I don't know how quickly they're going to go to that. It could be a case where Punk is involved in the Royal Rumble match itself, and then that leads to something with Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. I don't think they're going to move. I think it'll be his first program, but I don't know how quickly they'll have that first match. I think that they may wait to have that a little bit further down the road, like I said, at the WrestleMania point. But, if you were to turn him heel and some other things were to change within the roster, I think that there's a plethora of opponents to go against him. I mean, if Roman Reigns loses to Cody Rhodes, Cody becomes the champion, and you have a babyface Roman Reigns, that would be a direction to go in. Certainly against Cody at some point. Again, I'm assuming that at some point that they're going to be turning CM Punk heel. It just seems like that may be what they're setting up to. And I think that if that's the direction they're going to go in, that there's just so many more possibilities of people for him to go against. Like I mentioned, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn. There's just a ton of dream opponents for him to go against at this point. But if he were to stay a babyface, I mean, you could certainly see something against Drew McIntyre. You could see, you know, there's just a ton of different people he could go against. I mean, you could see him against even Dominic Mysterio at some point. You know, I could envision that happening, or something against Bobby Lashley, Logan Paul. I mean, I just think that there's a ton of possibilities for him.
I believe this is Mike from Atlantic City. You're up next on Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight, Mike?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned about future opponents for Punk and then about the whole heel thing, because I don't know if you guys heard some rumblings about, like, next year sometime, they got a major feud plan for Punk, which will be Punk and Reigns. And I think Reigns would go babyface, Punk would go heel, and Heyman would go with Punk. So it would be like a double turn there. And I found that very interesting. Yeah, like, there's been some rumblings about that. Probably sometime after Mania, like after the Rollins program's over. Have you guys heard anything about that?
Yeah. I have not, although in my column that's coming up in this week's newsletter, I do address potential Punk versus Roman Reigns feud. The Paul Heyman aspect is interesting. Heyman obviously having managed Punk during Punk's previous run in WWE, now managing the Bloodline. One of the things that's interesting to me about this, Joel, is there's no December PLE for WWE. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to do, I mean, you could have done, say, Punk Rollins at the December PLE and then Punk Reigns at Royal Rumble. But now with no December PLE, that kind of backs everything up. And then you're into WrestleMania season. And so you would assume that the WrestleMania plans have already been written, if not in stone, then at least in pencil, especially for someone like Roman Reigns. And so how does the arrival of Punk change whatever WrestleMania dynamic is in play with Roman Reigns, whether it's The Rock, whether it's Cody Rhodes? There's a lot of speculation that if it was going to be Cody Rhodes, which I think people would say is the favorite, that Cody would beat Roman Reigns this time. Okay, well, if Cody beats Roman Reigns and Punk doesn't get a chance to face Reigns until after WrestleMania, how does that change the dynamic, because now Reigns is not champion? Or do you try to do a Punk versus Reigns match before WrestleMania while Reigns is still champion, but then do you have Punk lose because Reigns is probably going to be champion at WrestleMania? So the Punk signing at this moment, so late in the game for really the WrestleMania preparations, really makes things interesting. I mean, you could do Punk Reigns after WrestleMania, but do you have Reigns win at WrestleMania so that the Reigns-Punk matches are for the title? Or do you have, as Mike suggested, maybe Reigns loses, turns babyface afterward, and faces Punk? I mean, if I'm doing babyface Reigns, man, like, if he loses the title at WrestleMania, I want to see heel Reigns without the title first. Because we've not seen that. And I think that was one of the reasons I was arguing for Reigns to lose the title at this year's WrestleMania, because I think that would add an interesting layer to the Reigns head of the table character, the heel head of the table without the title. How does he react? How does he bark now that he doesn't have the title? Like, does he even get angry, or does he get more intense, you know? And so, you know, I think it would be a mistake to turn him babyface right after the title loss. So if you do a title loss at WrestleMania and want to do Reigns babyface versus Punk, to me, you're talking later on in 2024, either summer or fall. You know, so many permutations of possibilities, Joel. Where do you land on this potential Reigns-Punk feud that Mike brought up?
Yeah, I think what we do know about Paul Levesque's booking right now is that things happen slowly. Turns happen very slowly. So I wouldn't expect anything to immediately happen as far as any turns following WrestleMania. But certainly I haven't heard anything as far as concrete plans. But the way things are trending right now is that I could see a direction of, you know, you have night two being that Cody versus Roman Reigns, that long-awaited rematch that people have wanted to see. And at that point, you have Cody beating Roman Reigns to win that championship. And then night one, you could have Seth Rollins versus CM Punk. And at that point, I'm not sure if CM Punk has fully turned heel, if he's still a babyface, but I certainly see that Punk winning that championship makes a lot of sense. And having those two champions as two of your main guys, where you can have Cody, you know, as the guy who's full time, he's going to be there all the time holding both those belts, as the undisputed, you know, the Universal and WWE champion. And CM Punk could probably be more kind of that part-time, kind of plays into that Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns type role, where he is there just on a semi-regular basis, but you know, not there week to week. And maybe you could do something where then the stories, then, you know, the bloodline is really falling apart at that point. Maybe Roman has some matches against Solo, has some matches against, you know, you could do something against Jimmy too as well. And you're really starting to see the fall of the quote unquote Roman Empire. And then if Roman then is kind of off TV for a while, you know, the whole bloodline seems like it's kind of disintegrated at that point, and Punk is still champion, you know, Paul then is just kind of roaming around backstage, and he's like, well, hey, Phil, it's been a while, you know, how are things going? And, you know, as Punk's holding that championship, maybe he then starts to build that alliance with Paul Heyman. And we just don't see Roman Reigns for some time after he's kind of taking care of some business with the bloodline. And then that leads into something natural, you know, for next year's WrestleMania, where Punk is maybe holding that championship. And then Roman Reigns comes back in more of a babyface role, you know, to get back at the final piece of the bloodline, which would be Paul Heyman, which then ties into CM Punk and having some big match there.
Yeah, just so many different directions and ways this could go. I think if you're a fantasy booker out there, who amongst us is not, the CM Punk signing certainly adds a lot of different layers and possibilities to what's going on within WWE, especially at the top of the card. Mike, any follow-up or any further questions you have for us tonight?
Just follow up about, and then I want to move on to the women a little bit. Don't forget the Rock and Roman too. Like that, I guess that's still a possibility. I'm guessing not, but yeah. I mean, I assume it's still a possibility. I mean, for a while there was rumblings of Rock and Roman night two and Cody Roman night one, but I don't think, you know, I think that's died off. So what do you guys think about Rock and Roman?
I think it's an interesting, I think it's almost necessary to tell the story of the bloodline because The Rock and Roman are connected as family. And so much of Roman's storyline of him being head of the table is about his family. And I think to make that connection, and granted, you don't need Roman as champion there because The Rock certainly as a part-time wrestler, not even a part-time wrestler, as a one-off match, the title does not need to be on the line, which I think is why you're seeing a lot of the speculation of, like you mentioned, Cody Rhodes one night for the title and then Roman and The Rock on another night without the title on the line. So I think it's intriguing to me because I think the story is there to really make it work. I'm not convinced that we're going to get it. I know we came very close, as The Rock has already admitted. We came very close to getting it last year. I would assume that there's going to be talks about it this year. And it's just a matter of nailing things down and being able to get The Rock to agree. I'm not sure how easy it's going to be now that Hollywood is back up and running to get him to come back, especially with as many projects as he likely has backed up in Hollywood, Joel. But, you know, certainly if you're WWE and you have the ability to use The Rock at WrestleMania, you're going to find a way to make it work.
Certainly. I mean, it just continues to seem to me that it's becoming less and less likely that there's actually going to be another Rock match. I mean, we just know the history that the last few matches he's had have resulted in significant injuries for him and has led to delays in his movies. And with Hollywood getting back up and going for him, that he's got a lot on his plate to where a significant injury would be really catastrophic to his career. That, you know, that with a lot of things that were put on hold over the this past summer and into the fall, a lot of that stuff's going to be picking up full steam this coming spring, and he's going to want to be a part of that and not miss out on those big paydays. Even though WrestleMania would certainly be a big payday for him, it's not going to be anywhere close to what he's going to get for the next, you know, Fast and Furious movie or the next Jumanji movie or next whatever franchise. You know, if he does a Moana movie or any of those types of things, you know, and we're seeing that with John Cena too, where John Cena has come back, but it's a much different version of Cena than what we've gotten previously, where he's being very careful. Where he is not doing anything that would put him at risk to miss any sort of time. Of course, the fan in me would love to see something with The Rock and Roman Reigns. Of course, as you mentioned, Mike, as you mentioned, Greg, that it's the story writes itself with the bloodline to see two of the biggest stars WWE's ever had and put them in a main event of WrestleMania. It just seems that it's unlikely at this point, especially with so many of their, you could call it full-time or their main talent, who's not the outsiders like a Rock, have becoming such bigger stars at this point where it's not needed to bring in somebody of that level to give WrestleMania the type of gravitas that it needs. It's worth mentioning as well that there have been reports circulating out there of that WWE believes that there's a possibility of even CM Punk versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's also been circulating. Yep, that's also being talked about for this coming year's WrestleMania. But, you know, my stance remains the same, that I think that they have enough here as far as their main talent to really make this a significant show. But it being WrestleMania XL, WrestleMania 40, they're going to want to make it, you know, one of the biggest shows that they can. And this is going to be Paul Levesque's first real WrestleMania where he's booking this most, you know, by himself. He's not going to have that Vince influence on it. And he's going to want to make it the biggest show possible.
Mike, you mentioned you had a question about the women, so go ahead with that one for us.
Yeah, about damage control. You know, they were losing, you know, my interest you know, and it was just Bailey, Dakota, and EO. Like, I love all three, but as a group, you know, it just, it was fading on me. Then you got Kairi Sane and Asuka, and man, it just, it became great. You know, and I love Damage Control now. I figured Bailey was going to take the pin at the pay-per-view, and it was going to set up, they would turn on Bailey. I'm not sure if Dakota is going to stay with EO or she's going to side with Bailey. That'll be interesting to see. But I definitely think they're going to turn on Bailey at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been rumblings about Sasha Banks returning. I hope it's true. I really hope it's true. I would love to see Bailey, Sasha, maybe the Four Horsewomen against Damage Control at Mania. So what do you guys think the chances are of Sasha coming back? Because I've been hearing a lot of rumors that that's going to happen pretty soon, especially with her training now, and she's been tweeting about joining a wrestling company. So,
yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that they would have shown her in the crowd at Wembley at AEW if they did not have a deal in place. But, you know, stranger things have happened. Certainly, I don't. There's been no deal reported between AEW and Mercedes Moné / Sasha Banks. So, until that happens, there's going to be a lot of speculation about where she ends up. I still think, you know, and I haven't been able to trace where those Sasha Banks rumors have started, but I still have to, until I hear something more concrete from some reliable sources, I still have to imagine that AEW is her destination, and like Mike said, she's training to come back, so she just hasn't been on TV. They want to make it a special moment for when she shows up. Certainly Damage Control has gotten a lot more interesting with Asuka and Kairi Sane, with the story playing out with Bailey sort of losing her grip on the leadership role within Damage Control. We've seen Dakota Kai take over more of a leadership role over the last few weeks. You know, it's a very layered story. It's not the usual story that they tell. You know, Bailey doing her best to help, and yet it seems to be misinterpreted more often than not, which is setting Bailey to be the babyface, which, you know, when the teases of Io Sky's turn first began to happen, I just assumed that she would be the babyface and Bailey would be the heel, but now it seems to be shoe on the other foot. So, Joel, talk a little bit about your impressions of Damage Control since the change in personnel, as well as the potential of Sasha Banks. Is that legitimate, do you think, that she could be coming back to WWE?
Mm-hmm. You know, as far as Damage Control, I mean, I agree that I think the additions of bringing in Kairi Sane and Asuka have, because they're just such wonderful talents, I mean, has really elevated that group. But, you know, from what we saw this past week on Raw, and it is, you know, that Bailey looks to be kind of on the outs with them, and that it's looking like, because she's entrusting these people, she's trained them like they're her friends, and they're not giving her the same trust back, that they feel that she may be holding them back in some ways, especially with the match that they had on SmackDown, where Kairi Sane lost to Bianca Belair, and Bailey came out, even though people were banned from ringside, Bailey came out and still didn't get the win. That there, it seems Bailey is probably going to be ultimately the one taking the fall, which is naturally going to put her in that babyface position of just wanting to help out her friends and them, you know, misinterpreting that. And then as far as Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, I haven't heard anything definitive about her going to WWE. It's all been about going to AEW. I think that the stuff with Stardom or New Japan has kind of come to a close at this point. But I think that, you know, whoever gets her is going to get a huge jolt into their women's division. So if WWE was to get her back into the fold, I mean, that'd be another really big addition, where they have really dominated the women's wrestling as far as creating stars. Of course, Stardom, it has fantastic matches, but WWE has really figured out that formula to getting women onto the same level of the men on a major stage, where AEW has really struggled to get that type of traction and find an identity for that division. So getting Mercedes in there would definitely help AEW, but there's a lot of questions as to, you know, how she would be treated there, how much time she would get on TV. There's a lot of women in AEW that, you know, we had thought that, hey, they're going to take them to the next level. As soon as they get this person in here, it's going to be a really big deal. I mean, people said that about Saraya. People thought Ruby Soho was going to be a huge addition to them. You know, obviously getting Mariah May, and then she's kind of been slotted at a lower role right now. Toni Storm is trying to figure it out with the new character that she has. No one's been able to get that type of traction where you can imagine, you know, one of these women main eventing an AEW pay-per-view at this point. They're still just kind of, you know, they can be a second from the top, somewhere in the middle of the card, but, you know, maybe Mercedes coming in there could be the one who helps elevate that and as a result brings the other people up with her. Whichever company gets her is going to be a huge addition for them. And I think she would be a lot more valuable to AEW because she would be, I mean, immediately their biggest female star. Whereas coming into WWE, she'd be a big time seeing Sasha Banks back there, but she's going to be coming into a pretty loaded roster of, she's got to go through Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair. I mean, the list goes on and on for WWE.
Mike, appreciate the phone call this week. Thank you so much for calling in and talking to us, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Yep, have a great night.
Absolutely. I want to talk, Joel, before we get into our email questions tonight, a little bit about AEW now and their Continental Classic. To me, this is really, and I wrote about this in my last column, but to me, it's really done a lot to focus AEW television. If you heard me on the Collision Post show a few weeks ago when it was first announced, I was not really sold on the idea of another tournament, given how often AEW runs them. But I've been impressed so far. The round-robin nature of it has added a lot more intrigue, and I think it's helped focus these shows. I think Dynamite and Collision have really suffered of late from just kind of a lack of focus, and the Continental Classic has really helped tighten the booking on those shows, and I've been really impressed with its presentation so far over the first couple weeks of the tournament. What have been your thoughts about the Continental Classic so far?
I mean, the things that I really like about having this style of tournament is that you're able to get a lot more in-depth with these characters and able to tell stories within this tournament. And you're starting to see them more on a consistent basis versus, you know, some of the wrestlers that you may see on Collision, or Dynamite, you may see them once for 1 week, and then they may be off for a couple more weeks, and then they reappear again. And they're just really not able to get any traction and tell a very individual story, not some sort of feud storyline, but really telling the development of that character. And I feel that that's always been a huge benefit for New Japan when they do their G1 Classic, is that it's really telling the development of that character, you know, what has happened to them throughout the year, and now that they're in this tournament and they're having to go through all these different opponents. And it just, the story really writes itself, versus always having to find these feuds and go back and forth with these promos and find different matches. And so it allows these to do things in a lot more structured way. And people have been critical, you know, including myself with this tournament, that, you know, if you want it to be more like a G1, take it really seriously, you have to have a lot of talent in here. And that's difficult to do on an American television show. Versus New Japan, where they are able to put everybody in the tournament. You know, even the IWGP champion is in the tournament. Everybody's involved in this, all the top talent. And for AEW, they're just not set up in that to do that at this point because they have so many other storylines going on, where MJF is still in his feuds for the world championship. He's got the stuff going on with Samoa Joe, and there's a whole list of other things that are still happening. But this just allows it to be a lot tighter of a show. It has a lot more structure. I think all the matches have delivered. You know, there's no matches that really stand out as poor in comparison to any of the others. There's been some highlights, especially Danielson versus Kingston on last night's Collision. And then this past Wednesday's Swerve versus Jay White has also been a really big highlight, and Rouge and Mark Briscoe, you know, just a number of matches that have really, really delivered at a high level. And they're structuring this in a way that there's still a lot more big stuff to come down the road. So if they were to do this one again, you know, I'd like to see more top talent in here, maybe expand the pool a little bit, and just kind of make it a really big focus. But, you know, in its first year of trying to see what type of interest there is, I mean, definitely there's major interest. Their show that they had on Collision that went against Survivor Series, you know, was a lowly rated show because it was going up against Survivor Series. But their show that they had this past Wednesday was up because, you know, they didn't have as much competition. But I also think people are interested in seeing how this tournament develops. You know, they know what to expect with these characters. They can start to get invested in it. They can start looking forward to the different potential matchups. I think that's always been a big part of wrestling, is giving people something to look forward to and start speculating on the different possible outcomes. And this tournament has really done that, to where I don't think people have a really good sense yet as to who's actually going to come out on top of this thing. Certainly, there's Swerve Strickland, you know, who's become a much bigger name in the last few months. You know, Jon Moxley is always going to be a favorite no matter what he's doing. Jay White, you know, needs to gain back some steam. Danielson, Kingston, you know, there's a number of possible people who can come on top of this thing. And I think that it's, you know, the way that they've laid it out thus far, it has led to a lot of different possibilities.
Couple email questions. One, we have to go back a few weeks for. My inbox is getting unclogged now as I've had it for the last couple of weeks I've been out. And this is from John, not our usual John, but a different John in the UK. He says, hi, Greg and co-host. I'm sending this before the pay-per-view, and he's meaning the AEW pay-per-view, as I'm in the UK and I won't see it for a few days, but had a couple of thoughts on AEW currently. Number one, do you think that the new tournament announced recently is a way for Tony Khan to let Bryan Danielson take part in a G1-style tournament, but in a slightly safer time scale and scheduled way? We know Bryan's desire to compete in the G1, but with the history of injuries and his current run of them recently taking part in the G1 could be horrendous for his body. This way he gets the tournament style and the hopeful dream matches, but over a longer time scale with recovery included. I think that is one of the very top reasons we're seeing this tournament. In AEW, Bryan Danielson has made no secret of his desire to participate in the G1 tournament. But, you know, with his age and with retirement creeping up and, as mentioned, the injuries, and with his family commitments, and it's really hard for him to go over to Japan for the amount of time needed to participate in that tournament. So, you know, bring the tournament to Bryan Danielson. And so I think that's a very top-of-line reason why this tournament is happening. Did you get that sense, too, when it was announced? I mean, Bryan Danielson was there, I believe, next to Tony Khan when Tony Khan announced it. I mean, this was not a secret by any stretch, it didn't seem.
Absolutely, yeah. When Tony made this announcement on Collision a few weeks back, you know, Bryan was next to him with the full, you know, patch over his eyes, you know, wanting to be a part of this thing. I think, you know, this does a lot of different things for AEW. It gives them some structure to the shows that we just talked about. It gives, you know, a whole, you know, typically people say, you know, it's kind of a dead period in wrestling from, you know, the Thanksgiving time into January where we see Royal Rumble. But for AEW, they still have that pay-per-view that's World's End on December 30th. And so this gives a lot more structure into their show to doing something different and getting into that tournament format where Tony can gauge kind of what the interest is in America, where people have been clamoring for more of a sports like New Japan style, which led to his comment of put your money where your mouth is, to see how many people are actually going to be interested in this type of thing. And I think if he hasn't seen it now, that people are really interested in seeing a type of wrestling show where the outcome, the wins and losses matter. The focus is not on the interference or who's going to come into the match, how is somebody going to get screwed over. It's just the better person wins. And certainly this tournament, you know, allows for that. But Danielson also gets to fight a variety of opponents. You know, he still has matches, you know, against Claudio, Daniel Garcia. He's got, you know, Andrade El Idolo. You know, he's got a number of different things that are still coming up here. And I think that Danielson just wants to maximize his amount of time and face a variety of different opponents and getting really the best matches out of them at this point. And, you know, just by having this tournament-like format gives him a platform to just go out there and have those great matches. because unfortunately in a lot of his big ones that he's had recently, it led to these injuries, you know, against Okada, the stuff against MJF earlier this year. Those significant injuries have really taken his time away from AEW so that he can recover from that. And him going to the G1 in New Japan, I mean, I think we all could imagine a scenario that on night one, he's going to go all out and get so excited and want to have a 5-star-plus match, and things are going to go in a bad direction to where he gets injured right away. And Tony Khan just really can't afford for that to happen at this point, being that Danielson is one of his top stars. And they want to preserve him for this coming year because he is going to, right after this tournament concludes on December 30th, whether he's in the finals or not, he's certainly going to have some sort of big match at World's End. He's then going to be flying over to Japan and having his second match with Kazuchika Okada. So he needs to be careful too, and realize that he wants to get the most out of this last year. And while still having great matches, be careful in those and don't do anything that's too dangerous or going to lead to any sort of injuries.
Second question from John, maybe a stupid observation, but do you think having WWE recently make a point of having authority figure Adam Pearce take back and hand over the Money in the Bank briefcase was a subtle dig at AEW? Wade and many others have been pointing out the flaw for weeks now about Jay White still having the unearned world title in his possession and Tony doing nothing about it. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but it's a thought, and I'm sure Triple H would love to have a little kick where he can. Maybe that was it. I don't know if that was the intention or not, but certainly it's been a criticism of AEW to have Jay White parading around with a title that he stole. You know, it's one of those only in wrestling things. AEW is not the first company to have broken this rule. Certainly others, WWE themselves throughout history, have done the stolen title storyline or angle. So, yes, AEW should know better, and I think people had hoped that AEW would avoid these mindless tropes that have plagued WWE throughout history, so maybe that's why people are being harder on AEW about it, but certainly that was a misstep, I think, by Tony Khan, and it just really didn't feel main event. It really didn't feel like a main event story to have Jay White stealing MJF's title and have that be such a big part of the title feud.
Yeah, I don't know how much of, you know, Paul Levesque or any of the WWE management, how much they're watching of AEW. You know, I assume that they're probably, you know, they're hearing about different things, seeing different things online. People are presenting different information to them. But I don't think that there's any sort of direct correlation unless that's, you know, some writer or something who wrote that in there who, you know, was noticing something happening on AEW television. But, you know, Tony has fallen into this habit of mimicking a lot of things that have been done in wrestling in the past. Certainly, it's been no secret that he's a fan of the WCW, the late 90s period of that stuff. He's a fan of ECW, and he's fallen into a lot of Vince McMahon tropes. And you know, copying a lot of that stuff where people had hoped that he was going to have a unique and original vision of wrestling, especially when he first launched the brand. But one of his quotes in his last media call really stood out to me, and I brought it up that because he was asked about this. You know, well, he was asked specifically about doing some sort of punishment towards Swerve Strickland when he did the home invasion to Hangman Page, and you know, Tony Khan then said that it really wasn't his place, you know, within the wrestling show to hold wrestlers accountable in that type of way. And again, I'm paraphrasing, but it was more, I allowed them to do their business in the ring, that they can, you know, they can take it out on each other in the ring, that he's not going to be the one to reprimand them. And especially, you know, that plays into Jay White stealing the championship, that it could be as easy as Tony Khan saying, well, you're suspended, I'm taking away your title shot unless you give this championship back. And unfortunately, it just continues to play into the narrative that Tony has been an ineffective leader at times and is not holding wrestlers accountable the way that he should be.
And John's email ends with, thanks for the show, and can I just get you to say a big thank you to Mike and Andrew for the recently ended All Elite After Show. It was a great show, and I think was the second longest tenured daily cast behind yourself. Going to miss it. Hope you enjoyed the pay-per-view, John. So, yes, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek ending their All Elite after show. I'm going to work hard to get both of them on this show because I love their voice and I love their perspective on things. They've both been on this show before, and I think they're going to continue doing things for the Torch, just in a different capacity. So certainly a hat tip to them for the work that they've done on that show over the last several years. Final email here. This is from the John that we know and love. John, who frequently emails us. He says, "Hi, Greg and Joel. Hope you're both doing well. First of all, congrats, Greg, on your wedding, and hope you had a lovely last couple weeks and a wonderful future with your new bride. Thank you, John. Always appreciated. I'll do three topics, but keep them significantly shorter than usual, as I'm sure you have other listeners and emailers and want to wrap up at a certain time. Firstly, the closing promo from a returning pipe bomb throwing superstar, the one, the only CM Punk. To be honest, I wasn't particularly excited at the prospect of him returning. That's mainly due to his supposed behavior in AEW, a company whose shows I've never seen, but perhaps even more so due to feeling like the return felt kind of out of place, other than being in Chicago, because I was excited to see the developments in the Drew Jay saga and Randy's involvement in it, and I was quite hyped for Randy Orton's return, so seeing Punk felt like an amazing moment, but still out of place. I'm the kind of person who sees the best in people and believes in second chances. So I believe a lot of his problems in AEW were probably not his fault, and I'm sure he's probably a lovely guy around a lot of people when he isn't being antagonized by certain people or allowed excessive amounts of freedom to run around in a company, probably good faith by Tony Khan, but maybe it irked certain others in the company, which causes problems. But from the outside looking in, it still doesn't necessarily make him look like the utmost professional toward the end of his AEW run, which is unfortunate. Just from listening to podcasts mentioning AEW, though, he did seem like he was making a genuine effort to be professional and nice to everyone at first, so I'm sure he'll do the same back in WWE. So I'm taking a wait-and-see approach with him and wish him luck. On to his promo. Does anyone else feel he came across as a little too happy-go-lucky and pretty much the opposite of the rebellious pipe-bomb-throwing superstar who had to constantly prove people wrong? It was a very good, albeit generic-sounding promo on Raw in terms of content, and he delivered it well, but him saying he loves everyone and wants to do this for the fans felt like he was giving cheesy, mushy John Cena-style promo from back in the day, welcoming people to Raw and telling the fans to never give up and we're here to entertain you. I understand people grow over time, and of course he is likely different in many ways to his 2014 self that left WWE, but I guess this kind of promo still feels kind of icky coming from him in particular. I think if most of the roster gives a speech like this after returning after many years, it wouldn't feel as strange to me, but it sounded weird coming from him in particular. However, I remain open-minded and will see what happens in the following weeks and months and have faith in him and WWE to produce great stories and moments. As for his next feud, Judgment Day appears to have their own feuds going, so if he's a babyface, I'd go with someone like Bronson Reed, perhaps. Raw is so babyface-heavy right now that it's difficult to find an opponent unless Seth turns heel or he feuds with Drew McIntyre, whose longstanding feud with Jay is rushed, maybe Gunther. Couple observations. Number one, he mentioned his wife by her WWE name as opposed to her real name. Possibly means nothing, but was interesting. Number two, he referenced Paul Heyman a couple times. Foreshadowing something or not? Question, did you have similar feelings about his promo and return, and who would you make his first match and feud against and when? So we talked about his first match and feud. I do think it'll be Seth Rollins. I think they can do a babyface versus babyface thing here. They've done it before with Seth Rollins. I think Bronson Reed, as much as I love him, would be kind of a step down for CM Punk's return feud. Mm-hmm. But I think John really nailed a lot of people, myself included, thoughts about Punk's promo. There was nothing technically wrong with it, but for someone who has built their career on being counterculture and being fighting against the machine, this was CM Punk sort of embracing the machine. And so it felt a little weird from that perspective. Did you kind of feel that way too? Did anything John say about that promo kind of strike a chord with you in terms of how you feel, even maybe looking back on it, something you may not have thought of initially?
Yeah, I mean, my initial thoughts is that I just knew him coming back into WWE, he is going back into the machine. You know, that him being in AEW, he's allowed a lot more free reign to be more of the voice of the voiceless character, that more rebellious type of character. And now that he's back in WWE, he is going to have to find a new lane for him to go down. He's going to really have to evolve that character.
Joel, I think this is even more... Even then, his first WWE run, he played that Voice of the Voiceless character then, this sort of, I'm working against the people who are trying to hold me down. So he could have come back and done that same thing, but this was I think this was a departure not only from what he did in AEW, but even from his first run in WWE.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I think he's kind of going to find a new character, find a new CM Punk. I think he'll still be CM Punk, but obviously him leaving WWE, all the things he said about them, and then coming back and then also trying to be that same guy. I don't think it's going to go over super well of being that now he becomes hypocrite Punk of saying all those things, then going back to WWE after all these years. So to me, it just came off as he could be going into a direction of being kind of this disingenuous guy. And that's why I really go into the direction of him turning heel eventually, because I don't think that him trying to be a babyface and playing this type of character who is happy-go-lucky, John Cena type of guy, is going to go over super well for a long time. And so I think that Seth Rollins kind of being the one who's the guy who's like, no, this guy's a liar. He's full of crap. He's not the one who's he's not really who he says he is when he says these things to the crowd. And that's why I was so upset with him him coming in. And boom, then you can start taking it more into the conversation of Punk's like, well, no, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be around the crowd. And Seth Rollins is saying, no, this is not the guy who I know. He is, he's lying to you. He's disingenuous about this. And I just thought that this is more of a natural way for him to turn heel eventually. And I think that's a role that Punk would be a lot more comfortable with. And I think that he'd be happy playing that type of role in WWE versus playing that, playing their typical babyface type of character.
Yeah, for sure. The second question for John is about Randy Orton. He says, he seems so happy to be there, and I was just so happy for him enjoying the moment and taking it all in. It was a beautiful moment at War Games, and again tonight, which I believe was SmackDown. He was also amazing on the mic. I would continue feuding him against the rest of Judgment Day, and perhaps he could be an important opponent for Damian Priest on his rise to being a singles main eventer. Orton versus Priest at the Royal Rumble, perhaps, especially since he cost Priest the cash in attempt at War Games. I also think he should remain babyface for the rest of his career because the fans love him and he's just in a great period of his career at the moment. Nakamura or Gunther or Bronson Reed could also be great matches for Orton. Couple observations. Number one, Randy said he could forgive but not forget and winked at the camera a couple times. And number two, he said he's got a bag of receipts for everyone in the bloodline in the form of RKOs, which implies they'll probably be not be full-fledged feuds with every single member. Question, did you notice Orton seem more comfortable than ever and more real than a lot of wrestlers come across in his promos? And who would you have as his WrestleMania opponent? So John sent this in 3 days ago, so I'm not sure if this took into account November 30th at 8:01. Mm-hmm. So November 30th was, what was that? That was Thursday. So this was before Friday's SmackDown. So perhaps John would have a different perspective given that Orton is signed to SmackDown. Doesn't necessarily prevent him from feuding with the Judgment Day, but sure feels like Solo Sikoa and the Bloodline, maybe Jimmy Uso, is first on his list. Orton did seem very happy to be back, and for a guy who wrestling has been his entire life, second-generation superstar, been in WWE his whole life, and taking the amount of time off that Orton had to take off, I'm sure it was almost a catharsis to be back and to know you were healthy enough. And I think there was a lot of questions when he was out with the back injury, whether or not he would ever be able to return. So for him to be able to return at this stage, I think there was a lot of happiness that was escaping Randy Orton over the last couple of days. But as far as a WrestleMania opponent, I haven't really thought about that. Maybe if you look at SmackDown, maybe Solo Sikoa is built up to the point where he faces Orton. I don't think he gets involved in Roman Reigns, although maybe, who knows, that could be the case. I just don't think that has a lot of juice, even though Orton's been gone for a while. Maybe is there a part-timer? I know Logan Paul already has, there's been talk about Logan Paul at WrestleMania, but, do you do something with him maybe? Do you build up a Grayson Waller or an Austin Theory to the point where they're suitable opponents for Randy Orton in WrestleMania? Just a couple names thrown out there. Is there someone I'm missing, or do one of those sound appealing to you, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, in his initial promo on Raw and then what we saw on SmackDown is that it certainly seems like the first direction is he mentioned the Bloodline in full, and not just anybody specific there, but then we saw Solo Sikoa come out. So certainly something with Solo seems to be imminent that's going to be the first thing that's going to come around. And then I wouldn't rule out the possibility of Orton versus Roman Reigns at something like the Royal Rumble, because Roman is currently advertised for the show, and I don't think that Roman is going to have any role in the actual Rumble match itself. So something against Orton there could be a possibility. But then as far as as WrestleMania goes, I mean, I think that we're already going to be shifted to stuff with Cody or whatever other direction they're going to go in for there. So I don't think there's going to be anything with the Bloodline there. And that would be dragging out quite a bit from now. I mean, being on the SmackDown brand, you know, it just feels like if Logan Paul still has the United States Championship, that might be a step down for Randy, because I think you want to frame him as really one of your top guys now. I mean, he's so excited that he's gotten another revival at his career that for multiple doctors, and, you know, hopefully this doesn't come back to bite him, has told him that, you know, he should never wrestle again. And this Orton we saw was excited, rejuvenated. I mean, the guy is jacked. He's bigger than I think we've ever seen him before at this point. He's looking fantastic. So he's going to want to get the most out of this. I mean, could you see something against Gunther at this point? You know, I don't know if that's the right opponent for him. You know, it's just hard to say, you know, where things are going to line up for WrestleMania with him. Because, you know, Brock is now kind of more in the babyface type of role. Do you want to go back to that? You know, I could see something against Logan Paul, but like I said, it just feels like the United States Championship, if that's still the case, is just not the same spot that I'd want it to be. You know, if Vince was still in charge, maybe we'd see Roman against Austin Theory, but I don't think Austin Theory is at the same spot now. So that one, you know, I'm still kind of up in the air as to where things are going to fall when it comes to WrestleMania and Randy Orton.
And the final question from John, Cody on SmackDown. As I said earlier, Raw is so babyface heavy, and additionally, SmackDown feels like it's lacking some star power. Besides, since SummerSlam, it has felt like he has been biding his time until a match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and getting involved in other wrestlers' feuds, helping his friends. Question, what do you make of Cody's momentum right now, and do you also think SmackDown may be a better fit? Keep up the great work. Thanks. Thanks, John. Yeah, you would imagine if he faces Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, he somehow moves over to SmackDown. I don't know whether it's a trade or I don't know whether, you know, they just kind of loosen the rules a little bit the closer you get to the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. It looks like Cody's next feud is going to be with Shinsuke Nakamura based on the attack that happened this past week. I'm not sure, you know, Nakamura, I would normally say, is a step down, but he's coming off a feud with Seth Rollins. So, you know, he's still got something to him there. But it's a feud that Cody can win pretty dominantly, I think. Cody, he doesn't have a ton of momentum right now, but I don't think he needs to. I don't think you want – if your intention is to have him face Roman Reigns for the title and potentially win at WrestleMania, you also don't want him peaking too early. So right now I think is about the time that you really want to start the ball rolling on him with his upward trajectory. And I think a feud against Shinsuke Nakamura is a good way to start him off on the right foot and get a, you know, significant victory in that way. What do you think about Cody's momentum and the feud it looks like they're setting up with Shinsuke?
I mean, he seems to be kind of the flagship guy on Raw, so I don't see him going over to SmackDown full-time. I mean, what we've seen now since Vince is out of the picture is that, you know, guys will have kind of their main brand that they're on, but then, you know, for convenience-wise or storyline reason, they may be flipping over to the other brand for some stuff. I think that come WrestleMania season, if it is indeed the direction of Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, that Cody's probably going to be doing he's going to be going to a lot of towns. I think he's going to be on Raw, SmackDown, doing the house show circuit. I think he is going to be a very popular guy come that time. But I think that, you know, something against Shinsuke Nakamura is totally fine right now. You know, they've tried to build back up Shinsuke after losing to Seth Rollins, and it gives Cody something to do. But I think once Cody really kind of gets to that gets to that point of going up against Roman, that he's going to need to go through some pretty significant odds, that he's already declared himself for the Royal Rumble. And that's, you know, that's no mistake that they're trying to plant that seed right now. And, you know, I hope some sort of, you know, bad luck comes upon him to where it's like, man, he's really got to overcome the odds in the Rumble, to where when he first debuted or when he first came back in the Rumble, he was a much later entrant. And I mean, being somebody who's now, you know, either 1, 2 or somewhere in the first 10 and having to stick out that whole match for the next 60 minutes and eliminate some people and avoid some elimination there is going to do a lot more for him and to really show that he's earned that spot. I know that I've heard some people accuse him that he may look like he's coming on like scholarship right now, that he, you know, he's just kind of been the guy waiting in the wings. He's been promoted as the number one guy. He's really been the MVP for the whole promotion this past year. With how much the guy has gone around to the different towns. He's been the face of the brand in the absence of Roman. And I want to see him overcome more. I want to see him, you know, go against some really tough odds and really come out on top of that. And I think that that's going to give him a lot more momentum if he is the guy facing Roman at WrestleMania.
All right, Joel, I appreciate you hopping on here on a Sunday night and joining us, talking about all things WWE and AEW, as well as your experience. When I said, to start researching the topics for this show, I'm like, well, you know, WWE doesn't have a pay-per-view this month. Impact doesn't have one until Hard to Kill in January. World's End is at the end of the month. We're free and clear. But no, we have an NXT pay-per-view this weekend,
mm-hmm.
NXT Deadline. And so we will talk more about that show next Sunday night, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern. So far, Men's Iron Survivor Challenge has Dijak, Trick Williams, Josh Briggs, Bron Breakker, still one spot left. Women's Iron Survivor Challenge has Tiffany Stratton, Lash Legend, Blair Davenport, Kalani Jordan, and one spot left there. That'll be determined this week on NXT TV. Ilya Dragunov against Baron Corbin for the NXT title, and Dominic Mysterio against Wesley for the NXT North American Championship. That show takes place on December 9th, which is next Saturday. But again, we will be discussing that show at length, recapping that on Sunday, next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, usual night and time on PWTorchDailyCast.com. So Joel, before I let you go, go ahead and plug your social media and what you do for the Torch.
Yeah, well, first of all, Greg, I mean, this show just was a breeze and just flew right by. It's always a pleasure talking with you about wrestling. But yeah, you can find my stuff at pwtorch.com. I did write a column for my in-person perspective of this last Saturday at Survivor Series. So you can find that where I add in a lot of the notes and different anecdotes of things that I saw being there in person at the show. But my main contribution is the PW Torch Daily Cast, which is the All Elite Conversation Club, which I do with my co-host, Greg Kanner. And we record those on Friday mornings, and those typically come out on Saturdays. And we just recorded this past show talking about my in-person experience at Dynamite, talking about some of the other happenings and stuff with Ric Flair, the departure of QT Marshall, and what that stuff means for the brand. So you can find that stuff at pwtorch.com. Like I said, comes out most Saturdays for the All Elite Conversation Club. And please join in on the conversation there and add to the mailbag, which is allelitecc@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, which is @JoelDonnell.
All right. Joel, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have you on again soon.
Thanks so much, Greg. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening. You can email us anytime during the week, wnialivecast@gmail.com, for any topics that you want us to cover on this show. And don't forget to tune in next Sunday. You can follow me on Twitter @GregMParks. My column is in the Torch newsletter each and every week, as well as my audio show, Greg Parks Out Loud. You can catch every week on pwtorch.com for VIP members. If you're not a member, vip.pwtorch.com. Join us again next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.